You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our new website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for September 8th, 2017. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the parking lot of Peggy Noonan's super awesome American History Funhouse Adventure Ride and Distillery, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
And we always do a hat tip to Ten Grain whenever we mention Peggy Noonan, because Ten Grain owns Peggy Noonan.
He owns the title of Peggy Noonan.
And clear title. Clear old school blogger title, yeah, to Peggy Noonan. And you should go read Mock Paper Scissors, because
every day, really. Every day.
Every day. But every day. You should especially read everything Ten Grain writes about Peggington.
Peggington.
Because he's got her pegged.
Everyone has to pay respects. Everyone.
Well, and I feel, I said on Twitter to someone today, you know, that if anyone has a gauge as to Peggy Noonan's blood alcohol level at any given time, it's 10 Grain. So,
and just so we explain for future generations that have no idea what the fuck we're talking about, Peggy Noonan decided to hold forth on the history of America from the founding of the Republic until breakfast today. And apparently the Civil War solved everything. After that, everybody got along. Everybody reconciled. It was great. It was just friggin' great.
And everyone coming out of the Civil War was a hero.
It was a hero who fought very hard and honorably. And everyone reconciled. The South tried very hard to reconcile. They tried very hard. And everyone from Soledad O'Brien to me just went to town on, just pinata'd this psychotic old weirdo, who, I might add, I felt compelled to add this on the little post I did today. Peggy Noonan is now a respected MSNBC employee. There was a Greta Van Susteren-sized hole in Phil Griffin's heart.
That's what it was.
He had to fill it with something that sort of resembled Greta Van. So he picked Peggy Noonan, who is a trans chandler for Ronald Reagan and has a long history of just fucking ignoring anything inconvenient about American history that screws up her vision, her Reagan-esque, cartoonish, childlike vision of American history, and she'll tell you that to your face.
Yes, she will. Yes, she will.
She'll say,
we're just going to move on and keep on walking after the Abu Ghraib torture photos that came out. It was just like, you know, we just need to keep on walking.
A great nation just should, sometimes everything should be mysterious, and we should just move on. She says in this whispery, gin-soaked voice of hers.
Yeah.
So she just decided that the entire history of this country didn't exist because it was inconvenient to her thesis.
Well, and she was trying very hard to criticize Trump for his tweeting and say, you know, they didn't tweet during the Civil War.
Yeah.
These brave men who fought the Civil War didn't tweet. She was also making a claim that it was a and she used a Yiddish word for shame, Shonda, that some Civil War Confederate stained glass windows are being removed from the National Cathedral. And she thought that was Shonda, a shame. And why she felt she needed to go to Yiddish on that is anybody's guess.
I can think of many Yiddish words I would use to describe.
I guess she was.
Putz.
Yeah.
Vance. There's a whole bunch Yiddish is a lovely language.
It's a wonderful language.
Full of wonderful, salty words to describe lunatics like Peggy Noonan, who, as I said, brand new, freshly minted MSNBC, respected MSNBC employee, and 2017 Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yeah.
It's been a, as I said today in my post, a bottled in bond banner year for Peggy.
Yeah,
she got a new job. She's got a new gig. She's got a new look. She's got a Pulitzer Prize that she can sort of wave around in the air, and she can go on Twitter and just absolutely show her ass to the whole world. And nobody who actually writes paychecks to Peggy Noonan and hires her to write things cares at all, because words don't mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
We'd like to welcome our old sponsor back. Where the Good Lord Split You, boy. Let me tell you. If you had bought, I didn't buy Where the Good Lord Split You, Emergency Farewell Party Planners stock when it was low, because the stock is through the roof. It's just through the roof. You can't even touch it. I can't even touch it. It's split I don't know how many times. Ironically, the farewell party planner, where the good Lord split you, stock has split like 17 times. But we'd like to welcome a new sponsor, a brand new sponsor. All of our old sponsors in place. All of our old imaginary sponsors are in place.
Yes,
But we have a new sponsor this week, the Why I Oughta Revenge Reminder Services. Why I Oughta Revenge Reminders, because sometimes you forget who you're supposed to be mad at.
But you know, it seems to me that the people that need Why I Oughta don't really need it. No. So the people that would subscribe to Why I Oughta don't need it. They always harbor that revenge in their souls. So.
Well, yeah, but sometimes you forget that, especially perhaps here on the left side of the universe, we forget who it is we're actually supposed to be really, really pissed at.
Yeah.
And we end up taking it out on people.
That's true.
And there are, for example, there are a number of people who are nominally considered liberals or on the left or Democrats or loosely attached or independent something something, who really want a party where it's okay to insult women, mm-hmm. it's okay to dismiss black people, where white people who are financially pretty secure can just spout off whatever the fuck they want. About their utopian ideal that will come to pass once the government is, you know, taken down and replaced mm-hmm. with something better. There is a party for people like that. It's called the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I invite you, Jill Steiniaks and others who are still hanging on to that dream, just go out and become Republicans.
And Riff Glass, I want to stop you there for a minute and uh-huh. just bring up the fact that we don't know who we're talking to on social media most of the time. And I have realized this week how important it is to just not get obsessed with what strangers are saying on Twitter.
Yes.
The reason I bring that up is you had a conversation this weekend. Junior dude was home from college for the first time. He went and saw his sisters got to see his stinky dorm room. It's already stinky.
It's already stinky.
Well, it's already stinky.
If you consider Axe stinky.
Axe body spray. Body spray. Oh, my God. It just hits you like a brick wall when you walk in this very confined space. Mm-hmm. But he was home and he has to write a paper for his anthropology course and study a group of people that he's familiar with. And whether that means, you know, if he was from an Italian family, he could discuss being an Italian family and that would be, you know, the culture of that and what that's like. And the idea is to get these freshman kids familiar with terminology of anthropology, but writing about something that's very familiar to them so they don't get caught up in trying to research something that they don't know.
Right.
They want to learn the lingo.
Yeah.
And so Junior Dude didn't know what he was going to write about. And since his obsessive interest is politics mm-hmm. and he was a big Bernie supporter, I said, why don't you write about college students who supported Bernie Sanders? And he loved that idea. You know, that's just great. That'll be awesome. And as we were talking about, you know, what he wanted to do and how he wanted to do it, and he was making notes about what he wanted to say. And I wanted him to be clear to define which young voters he was talking about. Was he just talking about those on college campuses or was he talking about others? And he said, well, you know, and he said something about the elites. You know, I really want to attack the elites.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I remember what I said, too.
Yeah. Well, I want you to mention that. Go ahead.
I just said, dude, let me point out something to you. Where did you spend your summer vacation again? Oh, that's right. Touring Europe. And how are you able to tour Europe's capitals? My dad is rich. Uh-huh. And you're going and you're doing what now? You're back from school. You couldn't decide which of these three schools to go to. So you picked the one that was most, you know, nearest and dearest to your heart. Right. Right. And you're white and you're basically, you know, I mean, we're poor here, but you're in terms of material needs, you're not hurting for anything.
Yeah, well, the deal is in the divorce, his dad got the three houses and I got the three kids. Right. That was pure prenup, you know, that's what happened. And I feel like I got the better deal, so that's fine.
But in terms of his junior dude situation, he's not, you know, he's trying to find the job and he's having a little difficulty. He's worked before. It's not like he's, you know, he's ignorant of labor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. But he was a dishwasher in a breakfast restaurant last summer. So it's not like he hasn't worked for a living.
He doesn't disdain work in any way. No. And he doesn't believe it's beneath him. But I just said, okay, so you vacation in one of your two or three homes, usually. you took a cruise with your rich father to tour Europe, and now you're going to
Scandinavia, yes.
Yeah, to the whitest part of Europe, and now you're going to the college of your choice. Yeah. Dude, you are the elite.
You are the elite, and you're a white male,
and
right?
You know what? This fine young man who I used to have to look in the face when I was telling him a joke, because
humor
was always, you know, tricky when you're
on the spectrum. When you're on the spectrum, right.
Cracked up. He absolutely cracked
up. He did.
And I said, you know, you were teasing me, right? And he said, yeah,
you got me. He said, you got me. Yeah.
Ask not for whom the elite bell tolls, buddy.
Exactly. And so that is my point, is that, and I wanted to read this very short thread.
Fantastic.
This is from Lance Mannion.
Oh, love him.
And this morning he had just this little four-tweet thread that I just loved. Five tweets. It is, one of the things I hate about Trump and his gang is they tempt me to commit the sin of pride. Next to them, I feel like a saint, and I'm not. I'm a rotten human being, and I can prove it. Not being as rotten a human being as the rottenest human being going is not grounds for canonization. Still, here I am day after day on Twitter, publicly polishing my halo. So he's probably costing me another few hundred years in purgatory, if not outright damnation. Thanks, Donald.
Yeah.
And I just loved that, because it is so important as we sit at our very expensive, in terms of the whole world, the whole world's income, very expensive technology.
Yes.
Access to technology. My God, this afternoon, our internet slowed a little bit.
Oh, no.
And there was like this, I clicked on something and I'm trying to write for Crooks and Liars, you know, and there's this lag and I'm just like, no,
you know. Damn you.
Yeah. And here are, you know, if not even going so far as Mumbai, but going to Houston, where you have people who have very nice homes having to clean up after a hurricane, and it's terrible.
People who lost their whole town.
Lost their whole towns.
Their
absolutely.
Town is gone. Their town is
and
just
I'm
gone.
And I'm sitting here in a dry, warm, carpeted living room, you
with
know.
Food in the fridge and healthy
food
kids.
Food in the fridge, exactly.
And count your blessings, absolutely.
Right, and not saying I'm better than some random person who is still wanting to relitigate the primaries, and not to get caught up in that. I mean, it's easy to bash Susan Sarandon. She's an easy target because she's very, very wealthy and very, very privileged. And it was easy for her to say, shake up the system.
Right.
And that kind of privilege should be smacked down every opportunity. But at the same time, we don't know on Twitter if it's some 14-year-old boy. Half the time, I think it is. Somebody who is completely unaware of their privilege and doesn't have a drift glass in the kitchen leaning out to the dining room as we're working on a college assignment saying, dude, reality check. I also want to say something about the hurricanes that are coming. I've been thinking a lot about these, as I'm sure we all have, these hurricanes. Mm-hmm. And Louise Hay died a couple of weeks ago. Do you know who she is? She's one of these new age people who wrote books about you can heal your life through your thinking and so forth. And you can judge her either one way or the other as being flaky or being judge her any way you want. The one thing that everybody said about her as she passed away a couple of weeks ago and that was a nice thing to say about her and it's absolutely true thing to say about her is she provided a home and a hope for people with AIDS from the very beginning of the epidemic, when people were just dying and dying and dying and dying and dying. And the zeitgeist around AIDS was, this is punishment for being gay. This is a gay disease. This is a dirty gay disease based on dirty things.
Right.
And it's perfectly okay to ostracize these people, and they are healing this. Is not a priority.
I remember,
and,
you know, this
you know
is...
and ACT UP came out and people really mobilized, and but it didn't mean that thousands of people you know, very creative people, very warm, loving people who were in families and had lots of people who loved them, died. You know, just in massive quantities.
Yeah, it was a plague. It was an American plague. Right.
And Louise Hay provided places of meetups for people with AIDS, family members of people with AIDS, friends of people with AIDS, and provided a structure where people could get together and have hope for each other.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was in her obituary was about how much they would cheer when a mother of an AIDS patient would come to one of these meetings. Mm-hmm. Fathers never came.
Mm-hmm.
But if a mother showed up as a way of supporting her child who was dying and there was no cure.
And never would be, as far as anyone knew.
As far as anyone knew, exactly. There wasn't going to be any remission to this. This is a death sentence.
Yeah, and it's God's punishment everywhere you looked. It was God's will.
And she was the one who, and like I said, you can look at her books and look at her life and her persona and so forth and say blonde Californian, you know, new agey, whatever. But she provided a place and she provided a support system and she provided positive message about having AIDS and what that meant and how we could confront it mentally. And that was important. And I see some of the things that she would be saying now about hurricanes and fires and sort of this plague of things that's coming over our country as being stirred up mental energy.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily make that connection 100%, but there is a dynamic that goes back and forth between what's happening outside our heads and what's happening inside our heads.
Right.
And so getting caught up in Twitter.
Oh, yeah. No, Twitter's
is a way of getting really agitated.
Now,
am I making any sense?
You absolutely are. Okay. But here's the thing. Twitter's a dumpster. You know, it's a garbage pile. It's shit scrawled on the men's room wall. And some of that is poetry. You know, Patton Oswalt stuff is hilarious and pure poetry. And there's people on Twitter who are eloquent and elegant and delightful and cheerful. It's also, this is what's happening in the world right now.
And when I need something breaking, I don't go anywhere else. I go look for it there because that's where you'll find something that's happening right now.
And then you have to do your actual homework and figure out what it is and
what the source is and who are you going to trust on Twitter. Exactly.
But it is also where people choose to show a portion of their face to the public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one is forcing anyone to go on Twitter and say what they say or do what they do. No one is forcing them to put Pepe memes up. No one's forcing gamers to act like absolute assholes. There's a certain, you know, intoxication to anonymity. And I believe me, as a semi-pseudonymous blogger, I get that. If you and I sat down at a bar, I didn't know you, and this subject came up, I wouldn't back away from anything I wrote. I'm not ashamed. Sometimes I use language I wouldn't use in church, but I use language I wouldn't use in church all the time. That's the context. I'm a writer, and that's the context. But, you know, there's this quote from Batman Begins. It's not who you are underneath. It's what you do that defines you.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do? What did you do in the last election? What action did you take? What actions have you taken since then? What opinions have you held and publicly defended? If you believe you have fucked up royally, what atonement have you made? Not to me. You don't owe me anything. But what, you know, did Joe Scarborough woke up one day and decided, oh, shit, the Republican Party is filling up with manure. Now I'm an independent.
Right.
Boom. Well,
Trump's a Democrat.
Right.
Right. Right.
But what have you done to undo all the damage you did? Well, nothing, because you don't acknowledge that you did anything.
Right.
You know, you were perfectly happy to prosper from all the horrible, hideous, monstrous, evil shit that your party did. And you were perfectly happy to go right along with those horrible, evil, monstrous people, as they called people like you and I, un-American, traitorous monsters, disgusting devils, terrorist-loving scumbags. You were totally okay with that, right up until the train rolled up to your door and it became about you and your fucking girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Then it was too much, but you didn't have the moral courage or the empathy of a 5-year-old to say, that's unacceptable. What my party is doing is unacceptable. 25 years ago, what your party was doing was monstrous, and you didn't do a fucking thing. It's 2017, and you're bickering about nonsense, and you're fussing around about what... And, well, I was independent 6 months ago. Well, I was independent 12 months ago. Fuck you, where were you 20 years ago?
Yep.
Well, I was busy stuffing my pockets, and now I get to be on TV stuffing my pockets, declaring myself an independent, and bitching about both sides.
Right.
No, I don't want that isn't who you are underneath. That's what you do. And what you do is terrible. And you shouldn't be allowed to do that. People like that should not be on television except as objects of mockery.
So let me ask you a question, Driftglass.
Sure.
How do you take, because we have there's a lot of news, there's always a lot of news to cover, but I think what we want to focus on today is number one, DACA, and number two, what happened yesterday with deal making and Trump and Chuck and Nancy and the betrayal? All of a sudden, the Republican Party is discovering, the Republican Congress is discovering that, oh my God, Trump is a fucking liar. He can't be trusted.
I'm watching reruns. All I'm doing is watching reruns. All I'm doing is watching the same Republican Party that suddenly discovered that George Bush and Dick Cheney were complete fucking incompetent monsters. Building their life.
I don't know if the Congress ever discovered that, though. Didn't they?
Oh, the George Bush disappeared as a public memory.
Right.
The Bush administration as a whole. And remember, the entire fucking Freedom Caucus consists of a whole bunch of dyed-in-the-wool Republicans who supported George Bush and fought for George Bush and cheered on George Bush and called everybody who stood in his way a traitor, putting on funny hats and pretending they'd never heard of George Bush.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They disavowed, the minute it became politically inconvenient to own their own words, to stand up in public and say, what I said yesterday was wrong and I apologize for it. They did what Republicans always do. They ran away. They're fucking cowards. They disavowed any knowledge. I was never even there. They had an entire mainstream media who was more than willing to aid and abet them.
Utterly complicit. Yeah.
And then suddenly everything before 2009 disappeared. There was no president before Barack Obama. No
one
was
responsible for anything. And they had a Tea Party lifeboat. Tea Party lifeboat to jump into.
And every one of these fuckers wanted to know why Barack Obama won't lead.
Won't lead.
They're the ones who are saying publicly, I will never cooperate with that black man in my White House. Mm-hmm. Never. Fuck him, and fuck his wife. I'm never going to cooperate. I'm going to do everything I can to sabotage everything he does, including filibuster my own bills.
Yep.
And then you have the same assholes who were Bush-supporting, right-wing, reasonable conservatives during the Bush administration are the same people who suddenly said, why can't both sides get along? Why won't Obama lead?
Yep.
And they're still around. So I have – no, the Republican Party is the problem.
And I see this three ways. One is this is just karma.
Yeah.
Everything that is happening is karma. So whether Donald Trump changes his mind tomorrow or not doesn't matter. This is all going – this is all karma against Mitch McConnell for everything he did for 8 years.
Yeah.
And that's number one. Number two is Donald Trump is addicted to only one thing, and that is success. And he is – people have finally noticed that he says this two-week thing. Somebody called it a Trump unit. You know, Yeah, go ahead. What?
It's the Trump Fortnite is the new Friedman unit.
Yes, Trump Fortnite is Newt Friedman unit that in 2 weeks he's going to have a tax plan. In 2 weeks he's going to have an announcement, et cetera. That is his brilliance. And I'm sorry to call Donald Trump brilliant, but there's one area where he's got this kernel of understanding the attention span of the American media and the American voter.
The Republican voter.
The Republican voter, absolutely. Right. Yeah, not liberal voters, but Republican voters.
Right.
Republican voters will forget what he promised 20 minutes ago.
They'll forget.
It's convenient. Yep.
They'll forget the start of a paragraph by the end of the paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
that conditioned to forget their own words, their own hypocrisy, and their own shit.
Yep.
And the media is perfectly willing to go right along with it because they're all complicit in it. So yeah.
So here we have, and I have a knitting analogy for you, Driftglass. Somebody walks in.
West Wing.
Somebody walks in to me and some other person and says, you know, I saw this sweater in a magazine and I want to hire somebody to make it for me. Uh-huh. And the other person says, well, you know, I have this store, but half of my employees don't believe you deserve a sweater. And the other half have never made a sweater before. They believe in sweaters, but they never really made one. And they're much more interested in selling more yarn tomorrow than they are in making sure that you have the right yarn today.
Right.
So, you know, we can work out a deal, but that's basically where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come to Blue Gal, and Blue Gal says, I've got the yarn, I've got the needles, I've got the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It matches the pattern that you have. I've made one before. Here's the one I made. And I can have it for you in this amount of time because
sure.
I know how long it takes because
right.
I made one.
Right.
That is the difference between Mitch
right.
and Nancy.
Right. right.
And Donald Trump is not so stupid that he doesn't see the difference between here are two people who know how to put
right.
together a package and will
right.
pass it and have passed legislation before. And here are two people that are just bullshit artists.
Yeah.
And so he knows the difference between that. I also think there is something really important about geography here.
Yeah.
Which is you've got Chuck and Nancy who are coastal people.
They are. They are.
They travel in wealthy circles.
Uh-huh.
They know how to talk to rich people. And I'm not saying that Mitch and Paul Ryan don't know how to talk to rich people. But the way that Mitch and Paul talk to rich people is to tell them what they want to hear about tax cuts.
Right. That's the difference. Yeah.
Which is the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel as though there's much more of a social kind of connection of, and this is not necessarily a compliment to
no.
Nancy. Okay.
No.
I understand the complicated relationship that liberals have with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi is, you know, it's not always easy to love them. But they get shit done.
Right. They're in the getting shit done department. Right.
Respect for getting shit done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that geographic and kind of social class, the class to which Donald Trump aspires.
Right.
He knows his voters are Mitch types, you know, are the
fucking morons. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the people that Mitch and Paul Ryan are trying to cater to constantly. He gets that.
Yeah.
But wanting a win requires, I'm going to go with the professionals on this one.
Well, and this is where a whole bunch of things come together. First of all, if this is karma, when does Joe Scarborough go broke and his dick
right.
fall?
Oh, I know.
That's
I know.
All I want to know. That's all I want to know. What's the day on which...
That's not very nice, Driftglass.
I didn't say it was nice. When did I ever say I was I'm nice in church.
Driftglass
nice.
Is not going to forget revenge against Joe Scarborough.
No,
he is never going to forget.
No. You know what? Irish are good at like four things. And revenge is two of them. You know?
Resentment is another.
Yeah. Seething resentment lasting for centuries. But here's the thing. I use Joe Scarborough as a proxy for many, 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 many people who are people like Phil Griffin and Andy Lack, who do the hiring at MSNBC, all of whom deserve a fucking lightning bolt right up their ass. If there is a just God with a good aim, karma will come for them. I sincerely don't believe that's happening. I believe the collapse of that enterprise is accelerating. Because they don't know what to do other than what they've always done. And so they're basically running downhill faster.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
eventually you lose your balance and you go head first into the, you know, into the concrete. But I also think there's something to be said. And this, again, for future generations, we're talking, when we talk about Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, we're talking about what happened this week with DACA and what happened with this week with the debt ceiling.
Right. Right.
And I think you cannot, I don't want to speak out of turn because this is a conversation that an opinionated middle-aged white guy probably shouldn't have or shouldn't weigh in on.
Mm-hmm.
But it is my observation that Nancy Pelosi, as a strong and clever and intelligent woman, strong, intelligent women are by and large better at handling abusive, racist male assholes.
Yep.
Anyone else.
Yep.
Because they have to be.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Guys can get away with, you know, looking the other way or walking away or being confrontational or getting into a bar fight. There's a whole bunch of things guys can do when other guys are behaving like Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But Nancy Pelosi and women generally who have come to that place in their life are really...
That level of power. Right.
Are really, really much better at knowing exactly how to... bullfight that bull.
Yeah, and when to walk away and when to just deal with it. And yeah, the number of assholes that Nancy Pelosi has had to deal with in her life and keep her wits about her, any woman at that level has had to deal with that. Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's rather than because this also gets into Ta-Nehisi Coates's column, which
go right ahead and talk about that. That was trending quite a bit today.
It was.
And by the way, we are recording on Thursday, and this all may just go away tomorrow. We don't know what Donald Trump's going to do. Nobody does. So
God knows. Ta-Nehisi Coates has an article in The Atlantic, which I did not open up on a tab because it just has a whole bunch of loud pop-up ads that you have to shut off, and I don't want to interrupt our conversation with a bunch of shitty music about lawn furniture. but suffice it to say, the article is entitled The First White President. Right. And I did copy a bit of it out, but there is Donald Trump is a hollow, malignant narcissist of a human being. Mm-hmm. All he doesn't care about success. He cares about his glory being reflected back to him.
Mm-hmm.
In whatever form it is. He doesn't care about winning. He cares about appearing to win. He doesn't care about success. He cares about appearing to succeed. He'll slap his big ugly T on any structure on earth if he thinks it will make people esteem him more. And it is a big, hollow place in his soul where a soul should be, much like many of his voters, that will never be filled. And but Mr. Coates points out that Donald Trump does have an ideology, and his ideology is white supremacy.
Yeah.
And it's really open. It's really fucking open. It's there. It's right out there for anyone to see. And the reason he caught on like wildfire with the Republican Party is that's their philosophy.
Yeah.
It always has been. It's been, well, at least my adult lifetime. There are deep in the ancient past, before the parties flipped, this would have been a much more difficult or interesting conversation.
Yeah.
But this is 2017. And for most of my or all of my adult life, the Republican Party has been a welcoming place for racists and xenophobes and misogynists and gun nuts and Bible beating assholes like Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he is attorney general and the reason he drooled all over himself in delight at announcing that DACA is finally going away is because nothing makes people like that happier than kicking children who are brown. Mm-hmm. Nothing delights them than turning hoses on school kids. And since Jeff Sessions can't turn hoses on school kids, what he can do is throw a bunch of immigrant children out of the country. And that's what makes him happy. Wrap your head around that.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Sessions is so fucking evil that what makes him happy is throwing children out of the country when they have no place else to go. And it brings him glee. That's not misbegotten or misguided or misunderstood. That's evil.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump chose the most evil person he could find because the nature of Sessions' evil is white supremacy. And that's what drives Donald Trump. It's been what's driven him his entire life.
Well, and the real key to Ta-Nehisi Coates' article is that the germ of the Trump voter is, okay, we had a black president.
Right.
The worst white person on the planet can therefore be president.
Right, to undo it.
And that is absolutely the basis of white supremacy is, and LBJ was the one who got this and encapsulated it in a quote, which is, as long as the lowest, basest, poorest, worst educated white person in the South can step on a black guy, he will vote against his own economic interests. He will do whatever you say as long as you keep the black guy down, because then he has a perch on which to be socially superior.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole election in terms of race was about. It was about insisting that the worst white candidate that you could possibly have, and he doesn't say this, but this goes along with gender too. The worst white man in the world is better than the best woman we could possibly have.
Well, the worst white man in the world is perfect because what he will do is what we have been frantic to do for 8 years. Yeah. I mean, the number of conservatives and Republicans who sneer at people like us say, see, now you know how we felt.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know how we felt for 8 years. Well, you felt that way because you're a racist asshole.
Yeah.
Not because of anything Barack Obama did to you or took away from you or disempowered you from or denied you. You felt that way because you are you're a bad person.
Yeah.
You're a racist asshole. That's why you felt.
Show me the gun that Barack Obama took away from you. Right.
And so and as Mr. Coates and many, many other people, including us, have rightly pointed out since day one, the foundation of Donald Trump's presidency is the negation of Barack Obama's legacy.
Right.
Period, full stop. And the reason for it is not economic anxiety.
Nope.
It's not job loss. It's not factories. Those are all factors, and we can talk about those. Once we get rid of the Republican Party, I'm happy to talk about all those. But what's driving these people is deep-seated racism that they cannot acknowledge publicly. So they get this proxy, this big, loud, racist asshole as their proxy, as their spokesperson, and they will follow him to hell, and they already have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's driving, and that nexus, that truth about our national conversation. Now I'm going to blow my own horn for 1 second. I'm not dumb enough to compare myself to Mr. Coates. But I did write back in 2008 a post called the Negrological Constant.
Mm-hmm.
Which equated the Albert Einstein needed a thing to make up to balance out a formula, so he invented a thing called the cosmological constant. It's just a number I made up because the formula doesn't work without it.
Right.
Well, you cannot understand American politics unless you understand racism and mm-hmm. white supremacy. You mm-hmm. can't do it. It doesn't make any sense. And I pulled quotes from Charlie Rose and David Brooks, who were just like scratching their heads and wondering why things were this way and why Barack Obama had to do this and John McCain didn't have to. Because of race, dummy.
Yeah, you leaned out of the kitchen and said, "You guys, you know you're privileged, right?"
Yeah, it's race. Why the fuck? Well, of course we can't see it because we all live in the same little bubble. The same little, New York and Washington, D.C. beltway bubble where none of our friends talk this way. None of them behave this way. None of them even speak about it in private. Even off-color jokes, we just look like, oh, Peggy Noonan will come over and whisper to you that this isn't appropriate for this venue.
Yeah, well, and it's what we call Chardonnay racism. You and I have coined Chardonnay racism and Fitbit bigotry, right?
Yes, it's that elite. It's that, we don't
talk that way because that's uncouth.
Right.
But because it makes us uncomfortable to think about white supremacy and how we benefit from it, right? Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly it's true and it's there and it's real and Donald Trump is the physical manifestation of it. And you can measure how deep-rooted it is by the level of hysterical discomfort on the part of the media to touch this with a 10-foot pole. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to talk about it. This is why the both sides narrative, which is ludicrous on the face of it, absolutely, it's insane. It's wrong. It's silly. It's dumb. It's easily debunked. We'll never die.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no other way to confront what's going on in the Republican Party unless you want to do one or two things. You have to say the reason the Republican Party is the way it is because of endemic, specific, cultivated, deliberate appeals to race.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Rush Limbaugh has a job. That's why mm-hmm. Sean Hannity has a job. That's why Fox News exists. That's why Breitbart's a thing. And on and on and on and on. All the usual suspects. Or you simply note the fact the Republican Party behaves this way and automatically deflect every conversation over to somewhere on the left. I'm sure someone's doing something bad too. Let's move on to the next thing.
Right.
Because the conversation, if you stop it at that point and say, no, let's not do that. Let's talk about the Republican Party, is so horribly uncomfortable and professionally suicidal for people like Mark Halperin
mm-hmm.
and Joe Scarborough that they will do anything to avoid it. And so they invented this myth. And this myth that saves them from having to have a conversation about what they did, what their party did, and most importantly, what liberals have been saying all along they have been doing. Because that they'd rather do that than anything else. They'd rather burn the NBC tower down than ever admit liberals were right
mm-hmm.
about the right all along. Okay. You might remember that a terrible, terrible person named Michael Anton parlayed his shitty, awful Flight 93 election pseudonymous column into a senior security position with the Trump White House. And this was a column that he wrote, and it was repeated, referenced, and everyone talked about it, and it was just horrible. And it was, he said, look, this was written almost exactly a year ago, and it was the Hillary Clinton presidency is Russian roulette with a semi-auto. Hillary Clinton would definitely kill everyone and destroy America. Period, full stop. That was just non-negotiable, clear as day. Anybody could see it. So we have to make this the Flight 93 election. You may die anyway. but it's time to charge the cockpit and try to land the plane.
Yeah.
No guarantees. You should, you know, it's so important. And whatever marginal, you know, icky feeling you might have about voting for Donald Trump, you got to get in there, man, and seize the plane, because even if you don't feel good about Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton's going to kill us all.
Yeah.
That got him a job with the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. It got him columns everywhere. It got him. And I looked at that a year later and said, no, this was the flight MH370 election. And the flight MH370 was the zombie flight that Malaysian airline just disappeared, and it just flew on and on and on forever. And I really do think that the thing.
And it crashed into the Pacific, and no one knew why.
No one knew why. It just flew on and on and on, and then it ran out of gas.
Clearly, some gas leak or something made everybody pass out or die or something. Yeah.
And I think what's really freaking people out is that there was always this consensual hallucination, consensual dream. You know, that he says in Gladiator, it's so fragile you don't even dare whisper it aloud.
Mm-hmm.
That somewhere up the food chain, there are adult professionals who will make sure that we don't crash the fucking plane.
Yep. Yep.
They might be careerist assholes. They might not give a shit about you personally.
They're
part
of the corrupt duopoly. Yeah. They're
they might, all of
right.
those things.
Right.
But if real danger rears its head, real existential threat to the Republic actually comes along, they will stop fucking around and steer us out of the way.
Yes.
And
yes.
tell us, turn the fucking plane. This is actual danger. This is made up cartoon danger.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get the hell out of the way of the hurricane. And we finally cracked the cockpit door, and it turns out there's nobody inside.
Yeah.
There's nobody but Mark Halperin repeating over and over again, it's both sides.
Yep.
It's both sides. It's both sides. And the plane is just flying on what it believes to be a centrist course right up the middle. But it's not. They're flying right into the teeth of disaster, because it would break their hearts to admit that one side is wrong, and dangerously so. And we need to steer away from them until we fix whatever the fuck is broken with the Republican Party. And that, I think, is what's really freaking people out. Because the systems that we thought were in place, the people we empowered by giving them money and a position and authority and television shows and newspaper columns, who were supposed to protect us from actual existential disaster, completely failed to do so. And all those people still have jobs.
Well, okay. But I'm gonna play devil's advocate with you for a moment, which is, who is the us that is being protected? Because that's really important.
Yes.
One of the reasons, and I do go back, not necessarily to the old tired economic anxiety argument.
Right.
But there was a poll released this week that showed that Trump voters don't recognize their country anymore.
Yes.
Because of the transgenders and the gays and the black president and it is white supremacy. It is what they're used to. It is their position zero of their life is white guys are in charge. And that got blown away by Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And the approval of gay marriage came with Barack Obama.
Yes,
and transgender in the military came with Barack Obama. And this acceptance of things that are just not what America is supposed to be.
Yep.
Two middle class, coal miners in Kentucky and West Virginia, right? And furthermore, there's the sense that the white guy is supposed to win,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't happen
among those people. That is true.
Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to that, I've been thinking all week about a cover of Newsweek that I have up on my bulletin board from 2009.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yep.
And 2009, everybody remembers 2008, 2009, there was a big economic crash that...
You remember it.
You know.
Remember it, don't you? Yeah.
Banks were going under, and things on Wall Street were... There were offices just emptying out, and everyone lost their job, and people lost their homes, and there were real bankruptcies in the financial industry that were shaking the foundations of our entire economy.
Yes, there were.
And the cover of Newsweek said, "We're all socialists now."
Mm-hmm.
And I tore that out and put it on my bulletin board.
Yes, you did.
I didn't pull it on my bulletin board to say, "Yay, we're all socialists now. This is great." I put it on my bulletin board because I wanted to remember the date of that magazine because I knew that was going to not last forever.
Oh, God, no.
It's not going to last until it helped people like me.
Right.
And that to me is sort of taking your analogy and then rewriting it a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's as if, okay, we don't know if this plane has a pilot or not.
Uh-huh.
Let's cut off everything after first class.
Yes. Oh, no.
And then
absolutely.
Fly, right?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. No, the idea is that the reason 360 million people don't fucking riot
is the
consensual social compact that at some level we're in this together.
Yep.
And that you know, we can all disagree on lots of things, but we can all get together on the Nazi thing, right?
Right.
Apparently not. Apparently, no, we can't. Yeah. And the people who are supposed to red card that, who are supposed to come out and say, nope, Nazi, you're out of the game. Won't do it.
Won't do it. Yeah.
Won't do it.
Yeah.
Won't. And that moment has been coming for decades. And those line judges have been asleep at the switch, turning away, lying to themselves, pocketing the money that they get for pretending that this isn't happening. And now it's too late. It's not too late for us, but it should be too late for them. There is a place in hell reserved for people who betray the public trust.
Yep.
And that's what our media and our political leaders have done for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They sold us out while we were clear. It was clear. There's a hurricane bearing down on us all, and you're telling me it's 78 and sunny outside.
Yep.
I can see the fucking hurricane. Why are you continuing to lie to me? Well, because I don't answer to you. Answer to a guy named Jeff Zucker. And Jeff Zucker will cut my balls off if I say there's a real hurricane and we should all actually take shelter now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and that's it's as simple as that. It's a simple, well, then the fact that you have that job, again, means you're a bad person.
Yeah.
You're just a really bad person. Let's get back quickly to DACA because that goes directly to this.
Yeah, well, and I also wanted to just note that someone, a woman named Allison on Twitter, at Allison, A-L-Y-S-S-O-N, sent a two-word tweet today. And it was Heather Heyer.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, wait a minute.
Yep.
You know, let's not forget that a Nazi killed a woman with his car.
Right.
And then we can go back to Black Lives Matter and why that started and all of those names that are just forgotten. And Donald Trump understands that we're going to forget Heather Heyer. And what time period? In 2 weeks. In two weeks.
I do want to go over DACA because that something has changed.
Yep.
Because as we mentioned, Jeff Sessions was just delighted that he finally got to start, you know, turning the proverbial fire hose on children.
Mm-hmm.
And the White House actually had a talking point memo drafted urging recipients to be prepared for a departure from the United States. Get ready to go, people. Get ready to go. So we're not fucking around this time. And then President Stupid stepped on his own dick again.
Mm-hmm.
Then he looked at the ratings and decided the ratings for this show sucked. So you know what we're going to do? I'm going to undo everything I just did and make Jeff Sessions look like a fucking fool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now there are 15 states in the District of Columbia filing a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And Nancy Pelosi got Donald Trump to tweet today that don't worry.
We're not taking any action. But you know what I found out? There was a little bit of backtracking to figure out. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump called Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. I find that remarkable.
Hey, girl. Yeah.
What do I do next?
Yeah. I have a feeling it was just
like that. Looks like we have
like
a woman
that.
President after all.
But this is something that we've been touching on for several months now. You know, here comes the debt ceiling. Here comes the debt ceiling. Yeah. It's the end of the world. Yeah. That's what precipitated this.
Yeah.
Because the Republicans thought they had a fucking deal. And if you think you have a fucking deal with a con man, you're wrong.
Right.
You're going to get screwed. And here's the thing about having a stupid, angry, vindictive asshole as president. He will fuck you.
Yep.
At the first, it doesn't matter if it burns down the world. He will piss on you. And the people he wanted to piss on this week were named Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan.
And let's not forget also that there was a day this week when the Dow dropped 204 points in one day.
And it what?
Jeff understands the complication that brings. Chuck Schumer understands that.
Mm-hmm.
Senator from New York understands that.
The senator from Wall Street. Yep.
Right.
Absolutely.
He understands that. He understands those people and what the phone calls from that part of the world are going to be like.
Yep.
And Donald Trump cares about that, too. And again, I think this is geography talking. You know, I don't want the stock market to crash.
I don't care about Doc.
I don't have one way or the other about Doc. I know, you know, hurting kids is bad for TV. People don't like to see that. And I care. I want to look like I'm a good guy and a hero and so forth. But 204 points on the Dow in one day, you know, a couple days like that, and Donald Trump is going to totally change his tune.
Well, and that's the thing. The Republicans' leadership had a deal.
Yeah.
They had it all worked out. They were going to make it. They were going to announce it.
Right?
Paul Ryan was up on his high horse talking about politicizing the debt is irresponsible.
Yeah,
so
right.
The guy who leads the party that created politicizing the debt, and as Lawrence O'Donnell pointed out last night, needs Democratic votes because his party politicizes the debt ceiling.
Exactly.
So, but again, the only people who remember this stuff or talk about it are liberals, because everyone else decided that that was an inconvenient memory and they could just put it in the back of the closet. So the GOP had this all worked out and expected to tie the debt ceiling to the Harvey relief package, and we're going to kick it down the road until after, basically, so it won't kill us for the midterms.
Right.
And you know what? Donald Trump said, ah, fuck it. I'm going to give the Democrats what they want. 3 months. And then you have to come back and we'll do this all over again. And then after he said that, he said, you know what? Fuck it. Let's get rid of the debt ceiling altogether. Why does this stupid thing exist? Which is a great question.
That's a great question. I totally agree with that. Absolutely. Well,
because Mitch McConnell, the big red button on his desk that he can push and blow up the world if...
And you say blow up the world. And that to me is the reason that Donald Trump is able himself by himself to destroy the Freedom Caucus if he wants to. The power of the Freedom Caucus comes from they're just crazy enough to do it.
Yeah.
But if they're not the craziest person in the room,
right.
They lose all of their power, right?
Oh, yeah. No. Suddenly,
the person that wants to is more than willing to blow himself up is the one that wins. Yeah, he'll blow all of you away before he blows himself up, I guess is the better analogy, right?
And in the service of memory, I want to do a very quick rundown of stuff in the news.
Okay.
30 seconds each. Many, many government lobbyists and contractors have memberships in Trump's private golf clubs and properties. This is a way of them buying access to the president of the United States, which is illegal, and it goes against the Emoluments Clause. And the Democrats offered an amendment that would shut that down. The Republican Congress killed that amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Republican Congress wants to keep it legal and open to let lobbyists and who God knows who all else to bribe the president of the United States.
Drain the swamp,
right into the White House. About 400 EPA employees have recently left, like in the last couple of weeks, which is exciting because the EPA is kind of the people you want. Looking the place over after a disaster.
And especially in Texas, where there is clearly a huge chemical problem with going to the hospital with really weird skin conditions.
Well, you have
walking in flood water. Yeah.
You have a lot of Superfund sites and a lot of toxic chemical sites and a lot of refinery that now is part of the ecosystem.
Yes, right.
And was never supposed to be. There's a gentleman named Jim Brindenstine. You should know him. He's a representative from Oklahoma. He's also Donald Trump's choice to lead NASA. He's also a climate change denier.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. Why wouldn't you put that guy in charge of NASA? Facebook, after denying and denying and denying and denying this was happening, suddenly discovered that, you know what? There were a whole bunch of Russian trolls all over Facebook. And they did pay us $100,000 for ads. And they did buy 3,300 ads really specifically targeting and polluting the political discourse in this country. And there were nearly 500 suspicious accounts. Golly, all the shit that those paranoid liberals and the people who were doing reporting on this have been saying was happening actually did happen. Oops.
And today, people noticed for the first time a video that was made last month by the BBC interviewing one of Donald Trump's campaign digital mavens.
Yeah.
And she was touring the empty building where Cambridge Analytica and these other tech people huddled to use Facebook to win the election for Donald Trump. And she said, oh, you know, Facebook won the election for us.
Yeah.
We bought ads. They bought, I mean, this Russian thing is $100,000, which sounds like an A-B test. You know,
right.
It's like, we're going to just drop a little money in here and see what happens. But Donald Trump's campaign spent $86 million on Facebook ads and Facebook posts and this woman actually was Donald Trump on Facebook, and she said, yeah, I could write like him because he's so authentic.
Yeah.
No irony, just, you know, I could fake Donald Trump all day long.
Because he's got a 40-word vocabulary. Yeah. Believe me.
She said that. I use believe me and very, and I can be Donald Trump on Facebook. Yeah. And I think, personally, that this is something that ties back to Kurt Anderson's new book on how things fell apart over 500 years, which is Americans need to grow up vis-a-vis Europe in terms of having a healthy skepticism about things. Uh-huh. And this is something we learned in the French election when Marie Le Pen lost, even though, Putin was involved all over the place with trying to influence the election. People in Europe know, that's Putin.
No, we don't want that here.
We don't have to pay attention to that.
No.
And this Facebook thing needs to happen to the point where, number one, liberals go on Facebook and make sure that they're very active there, as distasteful as that is for a lot of us. I know you hate it. I know you do. My dad hates it, too. You two men of Chicago just hate Facebook.
We do. It's a thing.
But there, people who there's going to have to be a truth army on Facebook because clearly that's important. And I'm very pissed off at my people, white Christian women who go on Facebook to see pictures of their granddaughters and believe everything they read over there at it's news. This election turned on stupid women who, look, Hillary did this. That's just terrible. And then,
the Pope endorsed Donald Trump. That's great.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, speaking of the Pope. Yeah. Steve Bannon decided to go to confession and tell the world what he thinks about the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, he doesn't think the Catholic Church. Well, Republicans love the Catholic Church when it's oppressive and cruel and vicious and medieval.
Yeah.
They hate the Catholic Church when it says, immigrants are people too, and we're put on this earth to help those who are weaker and lesser and less fortunate than we are, and we're supposed to love each other, and climate change is real, and grow the fuck up, you idiots. So,
and Pope Francis has gone way further than that. He has embraced atheists. He has said, "Who am I to judge?" I mean,
he's gone the there. Pope.
That's who you are, and he is not being the authoritarian leader, right wing leader that Donald Trump is. That's what Catholics like Steve Bannon want the Pope to be, is a right wing authoritarian leader like Donald Trump. So
with a direct line to Jesus, and so he decided to open up about the fact that Catholic Church is awful, and their position on illegal immigration is because they need to breed lots of little kids to fill the pews.
Yeah.
He's just a horrible fucking human being. And by the way, he sat at the right hand of power for the last 6 months, and he's still there.
Mm-hmm.
The chair might be empty, but that cell phone is working overtime. And speaking of cell phones and conversations that you have in the Oval Office, you know what the Justice Department found out this week, Blue Gal?
What did they find out, Dirk Glass?
Apparently, Barack Obama never, ever, ever wiretapped Trump Tower, period, full stop. That was another Donald Trump lie, apparently.
Well, now the next thing you're going to tell me is that book Clinton Cash didn't have any facts in it.
Yeah, it had a lot of stuff in it, a lot of words in there. There were a lot of words, there was a lot of punctuation. But speaking of people who put words together and lie for a living, Chris Kullback, as you might know, is the esteemed head of Donald Trump's Voter Suppression Committee. He's also a paid contributor at Breitbart News, because why wouldn't he be?
And his whole committee is using private email accounts, by the way. Yeah. So.
And no one, again, the only people who are making a stink about this are the people with no power to do anything about it whatsoever.
Right.
One day we will be. And finally, of course, this is the week that North Korea kept waving nukes around. There's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing Blue Gal can do about it other than, like hurricanes, wish us all well and pray for the best and try to find good people to help us through what is an incredibly stressful, exhausting, scary time.
Yep. And Nancy Pelosi was on the news this morning in a press conference saying that she is quite convinced that North Korea doesn't want to use nuclear weapons. They want to sell nuclear weapons to other bad people. And I said, that does not make me feel safer, Nancy.
No.
So, that is the thing.
The news that people wanted to take away, the news that our media wanted to take away, they want to take away from every time that Donald Trump doesn't actually throw up on his own shoes and drop his pants and start rambling, is that the great pivot has arrived.
Well, and that is my last comment for this podcast on anything substantial, which is don't worry about normalizing Donald Trump.
No.
I was worried about that yesterday when this thing happened of the Democrats' plan going through and him sort of looking presidential in the Oval Office sitting with four members of Congress.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that. There is no way that he is going to pivot or be sane or be stable or be in any way not stripping out his own dick tomorrow.
Yeah. No, the great pivot will not arise from the pivot patch. It will not fly across the world distributing bipartisanship to good boys and girls. There is no fucking pivot. Here's the analogy that I use for myself. There are certain things, like world-ending things, that you can find a way to work on with people that you really, really think are horrible. Yeah. The United States and Russia still partner on the International Space Station. Now, Russia wants out of the deal, and in 2024, this might be a different story. But even though we are opponents and they are a hostile foreign power that fucked with our election and screws with us every day and is hacking our nuclear facilities, we still have this child with them that we are both responsible for. And we find a way to make things like that work. So that's all this is.
Well, and Putin said the right thing about North Korea this week as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are standards. And this is the thing with Pelosi and Schumer as well, which is, we resist. Yeah, we're going to fight Trump. We're not going to default on the nation's debt in order to hurt Trump.
No.
We're going to finagle and negotiate and make a deal so that America doesn't default on their debt, because that is an act that has consequences far beyond Trump or anything else and will create real suffering in the world.
And just as a reminder, that this is why Democrats gave in during budget negotiations with Republicans when Barack Obama was president, because the Republicans said, we will blow the fucking world
up
unless you let Bush tax cuts live forever. And rather than and rather than have people's unemployment, you know, be withdrawn, Barack Obama said, fine, you are going to really hurt real people.
No, right, because we were losing 50,000 jobs a day in November of 2008. We did that. And when you're hemorrhaging jobs, I mean, this is also the compromise about single payer and public option as well, which is the decision was made. We're not going to fire millions of insurance company employees at a point when they can't get a job anywhere. We already have enough unemployment. So, you make these compromises and they suck.
Right.
But, it's called doing the best you can.
And the reason that you have to make these compromises is because the other guy's willing to hold innocent people hostage.
Well, and this is the thing with the latest out of I tweeted, OMFG, just bury the Republican Party already, because Topher Spiro said this latest attack on Obamacare is to bring the spending down to zero by 2027.
Yeah.
When all Republicans will be dead. Right.
Oh, and I do want to give you one date to think about, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
September 30th. You know what September 30th is?
It's the deadline that the parliamentarian has given for Obamacare repeal under reconciliation. And just made you so hot that I know
you
that.
Did. You are so hot. Let's end this goddamn podcast so I can make out with you. You know what? Each week we post to our Facebook page and website.
An internet kitty or dog or pet sent in by you, the listeners, because this week's internet pet is a gorgeous dog named Timber. Timber came home from the local Humane Society 12 years ago, and Timber sure looks like a purebred husky, gorgeous blue eyes, but he is way too busy with his daily walks, regular tummy rubs, and sofa naps to take your Ancestry.com DNA test, so you're just going to have to deal.
Take his word for it.
Yeah, take his word for it. He's gorgeous, blue-eyed, husky, gorgeous Timber. We love you, and go look for Timber on our Facebook page or website.
And his person is wearing a delightful outfit, by the way.
Yeah. Now, that's not in the picture, but this is on Twitter. His person wore a DGBG T-shirt. That's how we got she got our attention.
Merch, baby. Merch is the future.
Merch is the future. You can send your internet kitty or dog or rabbit to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union's letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Now, be aware, you know, all this Facebook stuff that has come out, we cannot tell your name or address or any personal information about who is shopping at Amazon. All we can see is a snapshot of what's being purchased at our link.
That's it.
And I went and checked that out this week, and it is great to see that nearly all of the items that are being purchased with our link are big box store stuff. A lot of people are buying pet supplies, pet vitamins. Somebody bought turtle food.
Food. That's Mrs. Mitch McConnell.
Human vitamins. Lots of people buying their vitamins you know, all at once, and when they refill their vitamins that way. All these kind of purchases that you would otherwise not be able to get from a local outlet, you'd get them at a big box store anyway. And that's some smart shopping. We've got smart listeners, and we appreciate you guys shopping at Amazon when it makes sense to do so using our link. We deeply appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at proleftpod.com.
Thank you.
Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Drift Glass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, on behalf of all of us, the Internet Kitties wish everyone on the path of a hurricane this week safety and security, and know that our prayers are with you.
Let's think about living. Think about living. Let's think about loving. Think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2017, Drift Glass, Blue Gal Podcast.
Fake news, sparkle farters.